Hey, it's Britt McKenzie here. I'd like to be on BFM talking about my new album, Freak Out City.
So I usually start this with a little bit of reflection. And around the last album, you were talking a lot about how you spent a lot of time focusing on trying to not be funny and having a more straightforward approach to songwriting. Now that you've got that first record out of the way, do you feel like that approach to songwriting has come a little bit more naturally on LP2?
Yeah, for sure. And I was interested, this record, I was far less conscious of trying to not be funny. I think on the last record, I was like, oh, I want to make this really different to Concord's. Now I'm just a bit more relaxed about it all, and just any song that I like, I just go with the flow. And it's not a comedy record, but it's not as sort of self-conscious, I guess.
Let those comedy elements come through a little bit more now. Do you ever write something that you think is quite funny and you have hesitancy to put it on a record because you're, you know, trying to make something a little bit more serious? Does that ever happen?
I guess it's one thing is often I'm working on films and writing kind of funny songs for these films, and part of me when I'm working on songs for my record is sort of, it's like my head is in a slightly different place, I think, and I'm trying to capture more personal ideas. And I don't know. It's a slightly different process, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you're talking about kind of bigger picture stuff on these solo records than you would for like a children's movie, right?
Yeah, I guess so. And then are there times when there's something funny? There are. Sometimes when I'm rehearsing with the band, Moana and Iris, who do backing vocals, crack up with something, and I'm like, is that too far? Am I pushing it too far with that ridiculous line? It's always tempting when you're rhyming things to come up with silly rhymes. So, I mean, I guess I do it a little bit, but not. It's not a focus for this record, yeah. You think you're gonna drown, but that's the way.
And then timeline-wise, how does this one fit in around the first record? Do you have an earliest memory from this project?
Well, a lot of these songs I developed touring the last record. I realized once I started performing live and rehearsing with the live band that the first record, the songs were actually, a lot of them were written at home with a computer, beats, and in the studio, and they're quite sort of distant. And quite sort of drum machine-y that had this sort of synthy element. I love that sound of that, but actually live, I had this really amazing band of players and it wasn't giving them much of a chance to kind of play, if that makes sense, because you're sitting on a kind of feel that just, not that it was like Kraftwerk, but you know, the beats that just roll around, some, you know, doom, 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 which I love recording and everything, but playing live actually is, and when you've got this beautiful band, it's nice that I was looking for things that had a bit more live energy in them. And so I started writing songs because I could feel that the live show needed a bit more energy. So a lot of half of these songs are songs I wrote when we were touring the last record to give the show more life. So crazily. And I think you hear it in the record that these songs are much more playful and have the energy of the band in coming through.
Well, I want to ask about some of these tracks. So the first one is Bethnal Green Blues. Obviously, it's got this almost like Dumb Ways to Die sort of angle to it.
Yeah.
But it's also the opening track on the record. And was there anything that stuck out about it that made it suitable to start off this new album?
I love the way that song is kind of like comedy lines in the verses. You know, it's like these little comedy stories about people dying in ridiculous ways, being squashed by a drink machine, a vending machine, and then it jumps into a sort of more holistic worldview about trying to make the most of your time in life. I like the combination, and I felt it was a really cool start for my record because people know me for comedy, but it's like a nice combination of sort of funny but human. Yeah.
You hear about the guy from Bethnal Green who lost his life under a drink machine. What a way to die. Never got the chance to pursue his dream. Lost it all there for a fizzy drink. And that was his life.
Last record had a bit more of a tricky recording process, right? So was it a little bit easier this time round without the restrictions or having to work remotely?
It was just easier because now I've got this flow with this of how to do it, and I've got this great band in New Zealand, a great session band in LA, with all these friends, and I felt like we just knew what we were doing more, and we knew from the last record where the sound started to work, where the instruments, where my vocal, where things felt strong, and how I feel much stronger about how to write a song and record a song for myself now.
Was there anything in those early days when you were touring it, was there anything that you were really excited about trying out on this record that you hadn't done with Concords or on that first album?
Yeah, there was this. There's a song called "Freak Out City," which we used to call "Rabbit Hole" when we were touring and performing live. It was end up being the song we finished the show with, and it was just such a firecracker of a song, and the crowd would always really connect with it, and the whole band would just it really would blow up live, which is a great feeling. Sometimes I'd actually get someone out of the audience to join the band for that song and get like a random. I'd say, "Can I have a volunteer?" I'd be like, "Okay, you're in the band," and then get them up on stage, and then they play tambourine. The song just had a real kind of live, mad energy, and so I was excited to try and get that on the recording. And so we recorded that one in Wellington at the Massey Studio, which is this big, beautiful recording studio there. And we all piled in. I think Ben was in one, the drums were in one little separate room to control them, but everyone else was in this big room with trombone, saxophone, Iris and Mo on vocals, guitar, bass, piano. So there's nine of us, and we played it all together at the same time. So the horns are blaring and they're coming in through the vocal mics, and everything is spilling into each other's mics. And we did three takes, and that was it. We got it, and it just has this really fun. I think we captured that energy, and I haven't really done that before. I had so many people playing live, like normally sort of focus on the rhythm section, and then you do the overdubs, and then you do the vocals, and then do the harmonies, and then you do the horns last, and then any little details. But this was one big, messy sort of swing, and I haven't done that before, and I really love it. Was probably one of the most fun recording moments I've ever had, for sure.
I guess that leads into the title track as well, which you spoke about a little bit there, but do you want to, I guess, tackle a little bit more of the lyrical side of this and how it fits into the story?
Yeah, the song is "Freak Out City." It's about people going down the rabbit hole, disappearing, as many of us have had friends do that. And it started with a lot of songs for me start with like one little kernel, and this one started when I was talking to the guitarist Justin, and we were just talking about he had someone he knew who he'd sort of lost into this conspiracy world, in some sort of conspiracy world. I don't know what it was exactly, but what he said was really caught my attention because everyone had been talking about that. It's like, "Oh yeah, well, people are crazy. They go down a rabbit hole." All right. That was very familiar. But then he said something that was I thought was pretty interesting, where he said, "Yeah, I'm worried because if it's happened to them, then I think then that could definitely happen to me because." They're my friends, and I'm very much like them. And he was worried because he was like, "Oh, there's no reason why this couldn't happen to me." And so I was like, "Yeah, that's a good point, actually. The people that this happens to are all sorts of different people who you love, people who you know well." So you're like, "Oh, yeah, you're right." So then it was kind of, I was just toying around with, I just sort of wrote that into a song. I was like, "Wow, that weird thing of what, there's nothing to stop me falling down a rabbit hole." And then I just, painted the picture around that. My dad was during COVID, my dad spent way, he lived on a farm and spent a lot of time online, and would come up with some, even before COVID, but he would come up with some crazy stuff, and you'd have to sort of ground him back down again. But yeah, so the second verse touches on that a little bit.
Oh, I said I sent you a link, see what you think. There's a whole lot of shit they don't want you knowing. And I get the feeling this world is on reeling. It's going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, was there a through point that you think, you know, where did your headspace keep falling back on when you were writing this? Was there anything that stuck with you?
I reckon it's mostly about the energy of the songs. I was trying to get life and energy into the recordings and trying to get a real kind of, and that same thing in the vocal, like trying to get the songs to feel connected and alive, yeah.
Definitely. And I noticed that as well. It sounds like you're having more fun on this record than you did on the first one. And I don't know if that comes just from more time with the solo songwriting process, or if it's that big band approach that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think, well, it was just so fun. It was so fun the whole way along. The recording is a total joy. The songwriting was really fun because I would often test the songs with the band. And so that's a real joyous like buzz because I have a little idea on guitar, piano, and then blow it up with the band. And I could sort of feel, you can sort of feel instantly if a song's working when you've got musicians working in the room because everyone kind of gets into it. And recording is such a mysterious art. Like there's so many different corners and paths you can take and missteps you can make. Like a small step to the left, and the whole song can fall apart. I was laughing with Lee. I was working with Lee Prebble on this quite a lot in Wellington, and I can't remember which. Oh, I know what we were working on that song. It's called "The Only Dream I Know," and we tracked it a few times. It didn't quite work, and honestly, we tracked one, and it was a bit wobbly. Like it wasn't the track wasn't sitting. It would speed up and slow down, and kind of just. Was good in places, but then a bit chaotic in other places. And I was like, oh, let's keep going because it's got a good vibe. It's got a good vibe. And then the more we worked on it, the more we were like, oh, yeah, it keeps falling apart because the scale, the bones are kind of a bit shaky. And no matter you, if you keep putting stuff on top to sort of hide it or to sweeten it up, it just gets more wobbly. And then we were laughing because we're like, wow, we've been doing this for such a long time. We still. This is a pretty rookie mistake to try and to make the song on this real sketchy rhythm section. So we started again, and then it sounded great. I love how it sounds.
I got a dream, don't we all? I can fly, I can fall. Not a cloud in the sky. No sign of pain, no chance of. I got a dream, like I gotta breathe. I'm on my way to the maple leaf. Keep on dreaming night and day till the Sandman comes my way. I'm not gonna ever let it go. It's the only dream. So damn hard to make a dream come true. Some shooting stars, but that ain't all I gotta do. Been washed out at sea, serenading lady luck. Been down on my knees, yeah, but I'm not giving up. No, I can't live a dream if you know.
All the Time is like a love song for my kids, and it's about, yeah, just having a lot of time for my children, and it's about seeing them grow up and being there for them. My father was not around when I was a kid, so I'm really tried to be a parent who's very involved in my kids' life, and Yeah, so I think the song is a really sort of in, about that work there, and then it's we spend a lot of time in summer on the Kapiti Coast, and it's set in that Kapiti Coast kind of summer.
Riding home along the bay, sipping up the last drops of the day.
My whistling is okay. It's, I tried pretty hard on that to whistle away that little melody, and I did that again. I did that with Lee in Wellington at the surgery, and we recorded this one though in LA, and then overdubs in New Zealand. This is a really fun song to play for anyone who's listening who's a piano player, because it's in C sharp, which basically means all the black keys sound great. So you can just actually run your hand, put the pedal down on the piano, run your hand down the black keys, and it sounds like you're creating this awesome, like, harp kind of sonic world. And so it's really fun to play. Yeah, I do love this song. It's definitely this probably the slowest song on the album, I think. I think this is probably the closest thing to some of the material on the last album, I reckon, is it's sort of about mental kind of headspace and seeing that, you know, things go up and they go down, they go, you know, then they come back up again. And yeah, it's in that kind of world. It's got this unbelievable string arrangement by Drew Erickson. Drew plays some piano on the album, and he did some strings for three of the songs.
There's a strange wind blowing.
And then this last track, Shouldn't Have Come Here Tonight, how does this fit in as a good way to wrap up the record as the closing track?
This is just a straight up random crazy jam that I started riffing late one night on an electric guitar. Definitely inspired by kind of a little bit of Randy Newman and Steeler's Wheel. The Do you know that song from Pulp Fiction, "Stuck in the Middle with You"? I feel like it's got a little bit of that in the chorus or the bridge part, and it's just a random description of a surreal party, and I just wanted to. It was just like a jam, a groove song, yeah.
What happened to the moon? I've never seen a night so dark as when I walked into your room and took a look inside your heart. Everything went black and white. I shouldn't have come here tonight. I had a feeling in my gizzard. When I came in, I should have gone. Between the bedroom and that wizard, I think I crossed the I shouldn't have come here tonight. Oh, you lock me in the kitchen, then you tell me what your brain ain't a game. You introduce your friends, every lady, yeah, you don't know their names. So, baby Jane, I don't wanna start a fight. I shouldn't have come here tonight. I shouldn't have come here tonight.